Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
We were somewhere around Barstow, on the edge of the desert, when the drugs began to take hold. I remember saying something like,
I feel a bit lightheaded.
Yeah, you should drive. Suddenly, there was a terrible roar all around us, and the sky was full of what looked like huge bats, all swooping and screeching and diving around the car. And a voice was screaming, Holy Jesus, where are these goddamn animals? No point mentioning these bats, I thought. The poor bastard will see them soon enough. We had 2 bags of grass, 75 pellets of mescaline, 5 sheets of high-powered blotter acid, a salt shaker half full of cocaine, multicolored uppers, downers, screamers, laughers, also a quarter tequila, quarter rum, case of beer, pint of raw ether, and 2 dozen amyls. Not that we needed all that for the trip, but once you get locked into a serious drug collection, the tendency is to push it as far as you can.
No way to make everybody happy, is there, Don?
You can still try.
Yeah. I choose not to try. Trying leads to failure.
Yeah,
failure
leads
to hate.
The mobile stream is still at 128K.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm just saying if I were to alter the mobile stream, if I were to alter the bitrate at which the mobile stream is currently broadcasting, I could do that, but it requires kicking everybody off of it first. That's the thing. That's the point I'm trying to make. That's the information I'm trying to get across, even though no one seems interested in hearing it. That's right. You know what you need to do is you need to set that microphone at a place where you can hit it more often with your hand.
You know, I keep hitting it. It's hurting my neck. I went home. I had a pinched nerve in my spine last night because I'm holding my head at some kind of weird angle.
You know,
my neck hurts.
You know, they make adjusters on those microphones now. Oh, look, there's one right there in front of you.
I keep adjusting it. It's just in the wrong place.
Maybe it's
do
your
not
head
understand
in the wrong place,
why, if your microphone is the one that needs to be repaired, I'm the one with the replacement mic.
Well, I think it's because your voice is sturdier, Dawn. I think it's because your voice is stronger and bolder and is more able to stand on its own, whereas my dulcet tones are fragile. My voice is delicate. I'm like Johnny Fontaine. My voice is weak. It's just that I just moved this microphone over here and plugged it in over into channel number one, and so therefore it's become mine.
Yeah.
You know, you started last hour talking into the wrong side of the microphone, which was especially great. Here's why you should feel better about that than maybe you. Okay, just hold on a second.
What to do with this?
I'm going to turn the music off for a second just so everybody else can hear the glorious sound of the microphone actually moving around and thumping into the table.
I've got this mic stand like between my legs with this pancakey windscreen thing in front of my... Of course, now Bruce does say that my voice sounds good on this mic.
I think it does.
My voice does sound better on this mic.
Would I put you on a microphone where you sounded terrible? No, I did that to Ryan White yesterday. I put Ryan White on the bad-sounding microphone. That's how much Rick Emerson cares. I subjected a guest to the terrible sound of this Audio-Technica microphone to our right, which is not a bad microphone in and of itself, but which does not have a windscreen, and which means that every time he opened his mouth, he kept popping his plosives. I can't even replicate it on this microphone because I've got a windscreen. So I have put you on a microphone which does your voice all kinds of favors and which accentuates and emphasizes the warm yet crisp timbre of your delivery.
But it's crippling my spine, and I keep smacking into it.
Well, you know, it's an imperfect world, Dawn, and it's a place in which trade-offs must be made for quality.
I'll try it over here now.
All right. So for those who didn't hear last hour's program, first of all, you are to feel shame, and the excoriating scorn shall be brought upon you and all you know by me, Rick Emerson. But as we started Legion of News, oh, we're just going to start the whole show over here in a second anyway, but as we started, because really, we just, all my momentum has just been, it's been quashed coming out of the gate. As we started Legion of News last hour, I threw it over to Don, as I do. I said, you know, Don's working on these stories. Don, what are the stories you're tracking today for Legion of News? And then you spoke, and it was like you were inside an empty cereal box. It was like you were inside a Quaker oat cylinder. And it turned out that you were actually speaking into the backside of the microphone. And in all fairness, the sign on the back that says, don't talk into this side, is very small.
It's on the other side of the windscreen.
That's true, and I guess you have to look at it through what is basically... Don's windscreen, and you all have seen a windscreen, like if you've seen somebody in a recording studio, and it's just like a big mesh circle that you speak through so as to keep your, which is like your P's and your B's, the so-called labial sounds, from making a puh-puh sound into the microphone. So Don is actually looking at the microphone through said windscreen, which is keeping you from seeing the thing that says, don't talk into this side.
Yeah.
The windscreen, by the way, is almost exactly what the confessional material is like. So when you go and you sit in a confessional and the priest opens the little deal and he says, you know, hello, and you say, greetings, Father, it's been 6 months since my last confession. It is through material almost exactly like that microphone windscreen. So that's another reason I don't use that. It weirds me out, makes me feel all gropey. But if it makes you feel any better, as you began the show speaking into the wrong side of the microphone, giving yourself a hollow echoing kind of a sound, mm-hmm. I heard none other than Tom Likas do that once. Tom used to broadcast through a microphone that I believe was manufactured by Shure, but that might be incorrect. It might be an AKG microphone, but it was a mic that had the most bizarre setup. It looked like a water molecule. It was just these. It was like two spheres. I don't mean like a flat sphere like your windscreen. I mean like an actual like a Nerf ball joined, like glued together. One of them you spoke into. The other one was dead, completely useless. I don't know why, and in fact, I do know why. It's because an engineer designed it. And engineers, God bless them, engineers are really good at making stuff that works, that has function. Engineers are terrible at form most of the time. That's why Apple is always better than Microsoft, because Microsoft is run by engineers, and Apple is run by engineers and also designers, you know, the people who have some sort of by aestheticians. So... which is a word I'm making up right now. But so Likas was doing his show, and he came on at the top of the hour. And he said, you know, 6 minutes after the hour, this is the Top Likas radio program. And he's speaking into the microphone, but it sounds like, this is the show that is not. Well, that's wrong. What am I? Hello? Right-wing wacko, a convicted felon? No, I'm your host. What's going on? And it just sounded so bizarre. And it's because whoever created the microphone that Likas uses designed it so the non-working, like, dead end of it looked indistinguishable from the part that you were supposed to speak into. And so he actually – there was this great thing where he did exactly what I'm doing now, where he stopped the music and there was this, like, as he had to turn the microphone around and then had to start the whole thing from the beginning, as I'm going to do right now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
We were somewhere around Barstow, on the edge of the desert, when the drugs began to take hold. I remember saying something like,
I feel a bit lightheaded. Ah! Yeah, you should drive.
Suddenly, there was a terrible roar all around us, and the sky was full of what looked like huge bats, all swooping and screeching and diving around the car. And a voice was screaming, Holy Jesus, where are these goddamn animals? No point mentioning these bats, I thought. The poor bastard will see them soon enough. We had 2 bags of grass, 75 pellets of mescaline, 5 sheets of high-powered blotter acid, a salt shaker half full of cocaine, multicolored uppers, downers, screamers, laughers, also a quart of tequila, quarter rum, case of beer, pint of raw ether, and 2 dozen amyls. Not that we needed all that for the trip, but once you get locked into a serious drug collection, the tendency is to push it as far as you can.
Mm-hmm.
right then. Let's try this again, shall we? It is 25 minutes after the hour of 1 in this, the month of August in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, the home of quality. Thank you for joining our broadcast on this very fine Tuesday. My name is Rick Emerson. I'll be your host for today, sitting on the left. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to join us via the telephone today. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. If you'd like to email, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email Don Taylor if you like. It is. Have I made the joke yet about how it like that should be your mafia name, Don Taylor?
No, you hadn't mentioned that.
But Don Taylor, I believe in America. I need justice. Well, maybe not. All right, it's just, you know, at some point, like if you should be needing a mafia name, that's what I would suggest.
Don Taylor.
All right, because it's, you know, it's a homonym. Whatever. Anyway, it's don@rickemerson.com. don@rickemerson.com. Or you can do the live chat. That is at rickemerson.com, the website. And once again, it's don@rickemerson.com, rick@rickemerson.com. Or you can call at 503-505-6964. Here's what's coming up today. We got the Taser Watch coming up today. Brought to you by MugsHotList.com. Snuff Watch coming up today. Brought to you by Mother Nature. We'll do the top five as well. Top five songs from this week in 1985 for no readily apparent reason. And they're terrible, by the way. Not all of them. Wait, no, all of them. No? Yes, all of them.
What year is that again?
1985.
Okay.
It was I have so little knowledge of pop music from the 80s, but even I know these songs are bad. I think there's probably one of them that I can kind of grandfather in as being okay. So that's coming up today, but they're all amusing in their own fashion. That's coming up later on. Top five songs from 1985. Let's see, what else will we get to? Well, we got a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm gonna mention two things. I'm going to pay off two things that we talked about during Legion of News. You know what I should start doing during Legion of News? Because here's the thing. Let's just you and I, and by you and I mean all of us here collectively, together, as one, as a group, as a whole, as children of the universe. So we do two shows. We do Legion of News, which happens from noon to one, over at PDX.fm, which is just a bunch of freeloaders. I mean, that's really what it is. Those are people just suckling at the entertainment teat. Just like so many suckling things. And then here, this is really where the core exists.
We save all the quality for this show.
That's what I'm saying, Don. For this show, you speak into the right side of the microphone, and that's where your 32 cents really pays off. It's where it's demonstrably heard. I don't even know what I was saying now. So what I should start doing during Legion of News, I should start telling some sort of a crude joke, mm-hmm. but then not give the punchline until this show.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Or you could give GPS coordinates for a prize, but you only give the last number on this show.
That's what I'm saying. Or like something like that, like with a telephone number or something. See, I like the way you think. I'm all for anything that just shamelessly manipulates the target demographic, really. It doesn't matter to me. That's fine. I'm with that. Okay, I'm going to make a note to myself about that. GPS. Awesome. To answer your question, pal, why am I here and why am I speaking into this microphone? So we have four microphones in the studio, just a little behind-the-curtain talk. So we have four microphones. We have two Electrovoice RE20s, the finest audio transducer known to man. Then we have this Audio Technica, I think, which is what it is you're speaking into right now, Don.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe that's another – what is that?
That is an Audio Technics.
Right there. So
Audio Technica.
Technica. So we have two of those. And those are both actually decent microphones, but they both need a windscreen. And only one of them has a windscreen. So I, again, have given the guest the shoddy microphone. You have been given the second best microphone in the room. Now, according to some folks, you have the best microphone in the room. I know people, including engineers, who do not care for the microphone that I am speaking into. The one real big selling point for everybody of this microphone right here into which I speak now is that the windscreen is actually inside where it cannot be lost or moved or stolen or anything. So also it can't be bumped.
Well, I do like the quality of my voice with this microphone better, and I like the way it sounds to me more, because when I'm using the mic that you're on, for some reason, my voice sounds really sort of hollow and weak for some reason in that mic, and I'm really not sure why, to myself. My problem with this is that it's on a mic stand.
On the floor.
On the floor, and I'm trying to sit at a table, so I have to, like, kind of put it on the floor between my legs and then look around it to, like, papers and the laptop. And then, yeah, then yesterday when I went home, just my neck hurt so bad. I had, like pinched a nerve in, like, the vertebra, like that one right below where your neck attaches to your shoulders.
S14.
Is that it?
I don't know.
Is
it because you're leaning forward or because it's too low? In other words, is it too far forward or too
I think it's
down?
Well, I'm trying to get it up a little bit. This side. I think part of it was too low, and part of it, yes, I'm kind of hunching forward a little bit. So I'm just trying to sit differently today. So we'll see.
Because you know what I could actually do is I could actually put that in one of the table stands. Just, you know, like.
Yeah, FYI. But the thing is, we're not the only people who use this equipment, and I know that either Sarah or I think Greg is the one who uses this when they do their show, and then he likes it on the stand. I believe it's his mic.
We are the most important people.
I don't
want to,
you know, monkey around with his equipment.
Yes, you do. It's, you know what, that's.
Although he did break my sunglasses this morning.
I was going to say, he stepped
up. So he owes me.
So I wasn't here for this. So please now, before we do anything else, before we talk about that, here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Greg breaking your sunglasses, which I wouldn't hear for, so I got to hear about it. I got this great idea for a non-lethal weapon that the cops could use. And as soon as I say this to you, as soon as I tell you my idea for a non-lethal weapon, that is, you're going to say to yourself, my God, if the cops used that, crime would stop. Just the threat of using this gun. Just the threat of using this non-lethal force against a suspect, that would be enough. It would be a sort of a, what the cops would call a prophylactic effect. It would stop the crime from even happening in the first place, much less trying to get the guy to surrender later. This would actually stop crime before it started. And I'll tell you that here. Also, Dawn apparently made out with one of her uncles at some point, so we'll talk about that. Because you're tired of, as you said yesterday, you don't want to talk about your breasts anymore.
There seems to be an odd theme to the stories that you want to talk about.
You're the one who brought it up, sister. I didn't you brought it up apropos of nothing, by the way.
That's not true. You were trying to figure out if I'd ever kissed my sister.
You don't have a sister.
And I don't have a sister, and so I said
but
I did
kiss
my
uncle,
though.
But see, do you see how one question didn't require the volunteering of the second bit of information?
But you don't necessarily have to, you know, immediately just latch onto it.
Here's other ways.
Like a Rottweiler onto a raw steak.
Yes, I do. And if you have any doubt about that, you can ask the male demographic in the audience whether or not I had to latch onto that. And they will all say yes. Like when I said, so did you ever kiss your sister? You could have actually just said, don't have a sister. Or, no. That would have actually worked. One syllable, two letters.
Yeah.
No. It said, I kissed my uncle. So, which immediately, you know, comes across.
I come from circus people. What can I say?
It is sort of, you know, we all have a little bit of the banjo twanger in us, I suppose. So before we get to any of this, though, what stories are we following for the good people of Portland?
An Astoria man has been arrested after his fiancée's death. Part of the Oregon coast has reopened for razor clams. And a fire has destroyed a hot air balloon business.
Well, okay, there you go. Again, it is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. If you'd like to join us today, that's how you do it. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. All right, this is where we're supposed to talk about the crap we did last night, but I didn't really do. I went, I taped another Outlook Portland, which is great. It'll air. Somebody asked me when it was going to air because I mentioned it was going to be John Rogers again. I believe it'll be a week from this coming Sunday. In other words, not this coming Sunday. It'll be, what, the 15th or something. But two Sundays from now. The next Outlook Portland with John Rogers of Leverage Fame, who's like the coolest guy. And, I mean, you heard him on the show. He was just, you know, very laid back and just, you know, smart and funny and very accomplished. But just makes you, and by you,
he's kind of dreamy.
I mean,
really,
he really is. He's just he's a
plus he's a big cuddly kind of a sexy looking bear
kind
of a guy,
kind of a bear, kind of
a teddy
bear. He really is a fantastic guest. But it's one of those things where you sit next to him, you just feel so fundamentally unaccomplished. Because and he's very laid back and casual in this. He doesn't ever really boast or brag about anything, which he certainly could.
Oh yeah,
like that's a guy who could actually say like, "Hey, I wrote Transformers. What have you done, pal?"
I think he's too busy. I think to actually focus on how accomplished he actually is.
That's the thing. He is busy racking up projects number 99 and 100 to tell you about the other 98 great things that he's done. So I did that. And then went home and just kind of stared at the ceiling for a while and just, felt like a tool. And I guess that's it. The next thing I remember is it was this morning. I tried to watch an episode of Justified, but I didn't get a chance. I was busy catching up a bunch of the email and crap.
How far have you gotten into Justified?
I'm like halfway through. Well, they're 13 episode seasons, I think. I think that's how FX run. I think that's how they roll. I can say this now, by the way, because I'm not in the presence of John Rogers, and I don't want him to feel like I'm inadvertently slagging his network, TBS. But let me just say this. Here's a statement that is absolutely true. You can take this to the bank. I would bet my bottom dollar on this. I would stand by this statement in all circumstances. Pound for pound. I'm just saying minute for minute. All things being able to judge it in a relative sense. FX, moment for moment, is the best TV network going.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best thing on television right there. HBO, a lot of great stuff. TBS, actually, even apart from Leverage, TBS got some great stuff going on. Showtime, they got your Dexter, your Californication, for whatever that's worth at this point. But FX... FX, hands down, has the best, especially if you're a guy or if you like guy kind of shows, it's all about FX at this point. Because they got your Justified, they had your Shield, your Rescue Me. I guess, is Nip Tuck still on?
I don't think so.
I quit watching that after the first couple seasons,
yeah,
but I know guys, people who are really into that. Sons of Anarchy, hey now. Yeah. Are you watching Sons of Anarchy?
I haven't watched it. I didn't quite get into the first episode, and then it's just there's so much TV.
There's so much crap to watch.
There is so much TV to watch.
But it's Sons of Anarchy.
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Which,
came from FX.
See, and here's a horrible thing about me is I've never seen that.
I know. It's funny.
I know.
It's funny in that cringy kind of way.
I know it's funny, and yeah. I know that it's... I've been told that it's funny, as you just said, in a way. People say that thing that sounds like an insult where they go, it's funny, in your kind of way.
Have you seen Louis yet? Louis C.K.'s new show?
No, another thing that I have not...
That's also on FX. It's... Also something that's very cringy, but also
he's so
hilarious.
Great. He's great. Rogers actually was talking
about
that yesterday.
Brilliant.
He and Cheryl were kibitzing about the new Louis C.K. thing, and I dig that guy. The thing is, the great thing about him is he's just full of funny hate.
Yeah.
He's just full of comedic hatred. And that's where I live, baby.
And with his new show, he's writing it, he's directing, he's editing it.
Awesome.
He's in complete control of it, and it's very funny, but it's also semi-autobiographical, and so it's often quite painful.
Awesome.
But it's hilarious.
I'll have to make a note
FX is quite awesome, actually.
And
Justified, which is one of the very best shows that's on the air right now.
Justified.
Well, I mean, they finished the first season, but yeah.
It's really good. So I think they roll 13 episode seasons over that place, and that means that I'm about halfway next. I think I'm on episode 6. And the first episode it's always hard to get a sense for a show from a pilot. You never really know. But I watched the first episode of Justified, and I thought, well, it's okay. It's good. And I watched the second episode, and I thought, that's a decent show. By episode 3, though, I was hooked. I was just like, this is fantastic. And I got to tell you, Rick Emerson's all man, you understand. But that Timothy Oliphant, let me tell you, that's... And he doesn't look like himself, for some reason. He looks... I hate to say this, that he reminds me a lot of Josh Brolin, which, it's like maybe in like an old No Country for Old Men kind of a way. But he also kind of an Ethan Hawke thing he's got going on. But he seems like way less of a douchebag than Ethan Hawke does, first of all.
Yeah.
But he also, and I've said this for the longest time, Timothy Oliphant looks like a young Michael Biehn to me. Which is, and that's not a bad thing. I'm all about that guy. But he's really good in
Except
that show.
He's 50 times the actor that Michael Biehn ever
yeah,
was.
Yeah, he's so awesome.
The thing about Timothy Oliphant is that he has crazy eyes.
Yeah.
He also comes off as really super intelligent and insanely charismatic.
Yeah.
But he does have crazy eyes.
Yeah.
And this role for him on Justified is brilliant because he's playing essentially a good guy with just rage simmering under the surface, which is kind of like what he did on Deadwood, really.
Right,
but
right.
But here it's like he's a lot sunnier and a lot looser, but there's still that, it's like, I don't know if you've gotten to that one episode where his ex-wife, he says something about, you know, not being very angry.
Oh, and she says, you're the angriest man
the angriest man I've ever met.
It really is. It really is a great show. I'm a huge fan. So thank you for turning me on to that. That's good. Because then it's like, I got all this other stuff I got to watch. I got the NCIS. Thomas Gill is he's really on the NCIS thing. So I got to watch that.
I have such a girl crush on Polly Perrette.
I don't even want to. Oh, back, just one final thing about FX. Here's the reason why FX will always have a place in my heart. Two things. One, The Shield, which I'm just going to say, you got to watch it. At some point, you got to just buckle down and get it watched.
And I got to get the last season in, and I've watched everything up to. I'm almost done with the last season. And Of The Shield. And I keep dragging my feet on it because I don't want it to be over.
I didn't know you were that far. Have you gotten through all the Forrest Whitaker stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. See, the last time we talked, you had not gotten even through the Forrest Whitaker part, I think.
No, I'm through all the Forrest Whitaker stuff. But I just keep dragging my feet because
you don't want it to be over.
I don't want it to be over.
And I got
to
tell you, that...
And it has gotten so intense by the end of next to the last season that it's just like,
That show gives you high blood pressure. I mean, yeah. That scene, and I won't spoil anything here, but there's that sequence where someone has died, and Mackie's got that guy hung by his thumbs and is like beating him with a chain, which I know makes it sound like the show is just a gross fest, and it's really not. It's just like about the gradual like implosion of a cop, and it's that thing where over time they take a guy who you ostensibly root for. And then they just turn him into the worst person on earth. And to the point where Carlin and I talked about this, Peter Carlin, where you just sit and you stare at yourself in the mirror after watching the show and go, what kind of man am I?
I really like the way that you actually compared Mackie to Don Draper.
Yeah.
Because there is a similarity there that there are these characters that are just reprehensible people. But on the other hand, though, you can understand their moral code.
Yeah.
And you actually do relate to them, and you're seeing this world, for the most part, through their eyes. But at the same time, you're aware that they are just poisonous, just damaged people.
But they do a great job of making you believe it, of taking you down the path and showing you like how you could get to the point of thinking that beating this guy with a chain makes sense, or whatever. Peter Carlin had the best comparison between Vic Mackey and Tony Soprano, where he said that Tony Soprano is ethical but immoral, and Vic Mackey is moral but unethical. In other words, Tony Soprano has a very, very strong code and an internal honor system where he has rules of his own that he won't break. But he does them to do horrible things like sell drugs and run hookers and and have guys whacked. Whereas Vic Mackey has a moral code. He believes that crime is wrong, murder is wrong, cops are good, criminals should go to jail, innocent people should be protected. But he'll do any horrible thing to uphold that. So they're sort of mirror images of one another. Yeah, it's just the best. And by the time you get to the end of that, Seamus actually, I'll tell you right now that the first four or five episodes of the final season, they're not bad. They're just filler, though. They're kind of just killing time. But then when you get into the back half, when you get to the final six episodes of the series of The Shield, I mean, it's like this roller coaster into hell. That is just, and Seamus would just send me these long, I get the feeling that I was like some sort of priest or something, right? Because Seamus would send me these long emails after The Shield was over every Tuesday or whatever, just saying, I don't know what I've become anymore, Rick Emerson. Who am I? A creature that walks like a man yet roots for Vic Mackey, who just and by the end of the Shield, they have so totally picked you up and set you on the wrong side of morality that you just don't even know what you believe anymore. It's awesome. The thing about FX, though, so when you watch The Shield, when you get done with that, you should move to Sons of Anarchy, which is a sort of less heavy. It's a pulpier, kind of more enjoyable version of The Shield. It takes place in the same universe, though, which is kind of cool.
There's a lot of actors on that I really, really love.
Well, so. it's got what's his name?
Clancy Brown.
And Ron Perlman.
Not Clancy Brown. Yeah, Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman and the guy who plays Curtis Lemansky makes a couple appearances as well.
Henry Rollins.
Henry Rollins plays a Nazi, the role he was born to play. He plays a neo-Nazi, actually, in season two. Plus Josh Lyman Shrink from The West Wing is on there. Let's see. Final thought about FX, because it's like 5 o'clock and we haven't started yet. FX will
always... Nobody's coming in after us, so this could be one of those shows that goes on to like 4:30 if we wanted to.
That's right. We are the law. FX will always have my heart, though, because they had a show, one of the best shows that has ever been on television, which of course was then canceled. And it aired like a year too soon. If it had been one of those things like Rounders, that if it had been come out like a year and a half later, it would have become, you know, a big mainstream hit. It was the show Lucky with John Corbett from Northern Exposure. Did you ever see Lucky?
Yeah, I think I did. Yeah,
he played a former World Series of Poker champion,
yeah,
trying to stay clean and not gamble in Vegas. And it was really, really, really good. And it was one of those things, it was so good you knew that it was just going to get canceled. And then sure enough, it did. But FX is just hands down to the best network on television right now. And especially because I know they're an offshoot of Fox, but it's not like they have lots of money. It's like their budget can be that huge. And it's like their win to loss ratio, their hit to miss ratio is like Pixar style. And it's like 90% of the stuff they put on is good, of their original shows. So anyway, so there you go. So there's that. And this is all true.
So I do have something I want to share with you if you're up for it. Or we could save it till later.
Is it bigger than a baby's arm?
Sure.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know what that means.
I don't know.
What are you going to share with me?
I'm going to play something for you.
All right. Let me just...
Okay. This is, Kirstie, this I discovered via Maurice LaMarche, who is one of my Facebook friends.
Is that the guy from Futurama?
Yes.
He's he's not Bender. He's, he's the cop.
Yeah, he's a bunch of, he's
one of their stand-in voice, one of the stock voices, though.
Yeah, and I think he's, he's Farnsworth, and he's Bender. He's Bender.
That's John DiMaggio.
He's one of the regulars.
Is he Hermes?
Yes.
Hermes Conrad?
I believe he is.
Hermes, I can't do the voice, but Hermes Conrad.
But he was also the brain on Pinky and the Brain.
Okay, yeah.
And, whenever you hear somebody who sounds like James Mason in a cartoon, it's probably Maurice LaMarche.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is I'm going to play you a little piece. This is William Shuby Taylor. Shuby Taylor, also known as the Human Horn. He was born in 1929, died in 2003. I'm plugging this in, so I'll be able to play this.
Down. All right.
He was famous for scat singing. Although, if according to Wikipedia, and I think this describes it, noted for his highly idiosyncratic scat style, using sounds and syllables quite unlike those used by other scat singers. He spent several decades pursuing a career as a scat singer, while also working as a New York City postal worker. He is famously known for 14 tracks he recorded in the early 80s that were one of those tapes, sort of like the Shags, one of those tapes that was passed around amongst people for years, but it never actually been, you know, released professionally. There's only one actual video of an appearance of his, which was from the 80s when he appeared at the Apollo Theater and was booed off the stage moments after beginning his act. Here is from that famous tape of Shuby Taylor, the Human Horn. Here is Shuby Taylor scat singing.
Shoo 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 wa, tree da, tra la la wee, wee doo sa, tra la la ha, wee dee blah, wee dee sa da ra, la da da shree, lo poom pa, la da da shra, wee dee sa, la da da ra, wee da da sa, pee pa, little bit, it's a little to be me, wee da ra, sa ba da ha, sa la ra, sa la ha, ya.
Is this because of the use your heart as a telephone thing?
This is just because I happened across this morning. Absolutely Kosher Records has plans to release an album including 50 previously unreleased songs by Shuby Taylor.
He was like he's like Cab Calloway with Tourette's. The best part is that there's a verse, chorus, verse structure. And he's like doing the correct number of bars and everything, too. Okay, now is he. I keep trying to speak, but it's like my brain won't function while this is happening. Is he playing the music as well?
No, I believe he is just scatting over existing music.
Okay. Here's the weird thing about that, though, is that, like, his sung melody, if you want to call it that, his verbalized melody seems to be following the melody line of the music, which means that it's like a pre-existing... That's just bizarre, though. That I wonder how that's even possible, that, like, his melody line is actually following the line being played by the keyboard. In other words, is this, it's a scat, but that implies improvisation, but I wonder if it actually is an improvisation that he has then sort of gotten down to a science.
Quite likely. He certainly does go his own way in these ads. He was rediscovered in 2002 by producer Rick Getz, and he appeared on his only radio interview on WFMU in 2002.
See, do you hear how he and the keyboard line are playing the same thing? So, like, did he have sheet music? And he's like, okay, this one's an E, and it's a 7/8 time with a little 4/4 later on.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The fiancé of a 42-year-old Astoria woman was arrested for manslaughter after the woman died from injuries at a Portland hospital Sunday.
Manslaughter?
I barely knew her.
Sorry. Around noon Sunday, Astoria police found Evelyn M. Decker unresponsive at a home in the Emerald Heights neighborhood of Astoria.
Decker?
I barely knew her.
She was taken to Columbia Memorial, then transferred to Legacy Emmanuel Hospital in Portland. Decker later died from her injuries.
Oh.
Sunday afternoon, police arrested 39-year-old Christopher Scott Fitzhugh for assault. Pending news of Decker's death, the charge was upgraded to manslaughter. He was taken to Clatsop County Jail on $250,000 bail. The district attorney's office said they believe it was domestic violence.
I didn't do it with the Christopher thing there, because that would have been too much. That would have been over the top.
So that would have been...
For the longest time, I couldn't find... The barely knew her thing wouldn't work, and I couldn't dig it up. And so now I finally... There we go. We got it running again.
Maurice LaMarche is Kiff.
Yeah, because Thomas Gill says that, that the Hermes is Phil Lamar.
Yes. And John DiMaggio's
Bender. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So Maurice does Kiff Croker, Morbo. I will destroy you! Calculon, Lure, Horrible Gelatinous Blob, Walt, Hedonism Bot, Don Bot, and others. And what's so sad is I know all of those characters, mm-hmm. and I can picture them all. Can I just tell you that Lure and...
Which character is Lure?
Lure of the planet Omicron... of the planet... Don't anybody type it. Persei Omicron 8, I think, is where he comes from. Lure is a huge thing. Looks like a gigantic frog. And he wears
I know exactly what you're talking about.
A cape.
Yes.
And his wife is Nininya, which is spelled N-D-N-D-N-D. I have to tell you that Lure and Nininya are Lara and I's favorite characters. We've just latched onto them. And in fact, you will, in case you have ever – we were talking about a couple ticks – earlier, like things you will say to each other on the phone that, like, it's a little shorthand, the couple language. Because it's like Patrick says something to you, and I forget what it even is. He says something like, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Some catchphrase
that's
he uses
so
with you.
So weird now. He calls me, he either calls me Donny Bear or he calls me Punky Bruiser. He says, hey, Punky Bruiser, I need you to, and then he'll just continue with what he's saying.
By the way, Thomas has noted immediately in the text box when I said it's so sad, I know all these characters he wrote, it is not sad. It is awesome. Omicron Persei 8, that's where he comes from. But it's, Lur and Nindin. And they're Lara and I's favorite characters. And one of the little verbal tics that she and I have developed in our relationship when we talk, one of our shorthand things, is the running gag with Lur and Nindin is that they will always get to a point into the conversation where Lur tells her to shut up somehow. And really crankily. But it's always in, like, some way where you don't expect it. It's like, there was some episode where he was going to eat a human. He was going to eat Leela, I think, as punishment for something. Because the humans had inadvertently been eating a bunch of their young because they tasted like chicken nuggets. Anyway, so the point is, he's getting ready to eat Leela, I think. She's being kept in a cage. And I may be getting this wrong, but it doesn't really matter. But he can't quite remember how to season her before barbecuing her. And his wife, Ninda, is nagging him. And she's saying, that guy that I could have married in college, he knows how to season a human for barbecuing. And Lur says, you know what he doesn't know how to do? Shut up! So Lara and I will do that all the time in conversation, where we eventually get to some point where I'll, say, you know what's not on sale? Shutting up! That's what's not on sale! Which then is a thing you say out loud, and then you realize that other people at Safeway don't know what you're doing.
Oh, believe me, I know.
Yeah. It sounds like you're about to go all fisty on her.
Yeah, when my husband and I are standing in line at the grocery, and he'll say something. Well, you've been around the two of us.
Yeah.
He'll say something slightly bickery, and I'll say something slightly bickery, and he'll just say, I will stab you in the eye.
Yeah.
And then you look over, and it's like the cashier is just kind of looking and doing this, like, he won't really stab me in the eye.
Do you remember, you know Kim Morgan, right?
Yeah.
One of the Kim and this guy she was with at the time. I remember one of the things that she actually rolled out during an argument with them. I don't know what they were arguing about, but I walked by the studios they were preparing for their show at Hot Talk Today, KUTK, and I just heard Kim Morgan saying, "I will cut off your head and kick it down the street." And I just was like, well done. And I filed that away into my list of things to say at some point in the future. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
A portion of the Oregon coast has been reopened for razor clam harvest after it was closed because of shellfish toxin levels. The Oregon Department of Agriculture and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife have reopened the area from Tillamook Head south to Cascade Head. Shellfish samples taken from the area indicate levels of the marine toxin domoic acid have dropped below the alert level. Recreational razor clamming remains closed on the Oregon coast from Tillamook Head north to the mouth of the Columbia River and from Cascade Head south to Bandon.
Recreational razor clamming. Never mind. I'm not even going to say it.
Domoic acid is a naturally occurring toxin produced by marine phytoplankton, or algae. The toxin cannot be destroyed by cooking, adding baking soda, or any other method. So don't try that, because it won't help.
Recreational clam razoring. That's what I was going to say, as opposed to razor clamming.
Razor clamming. So, you know,
it cannot be destroyed by anything, did you say? That there's no chemical or there's nothing man?
There's
or
no substance known to man
that can destroy it. Awesome. Fantastic. Wonderful. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A three-story barn in Derry, New Hampshire, is being called a total loss after a two-alarm fire destroyed it Sunday. Lance Stevens, I guess he's a neighbor, said it was a fixture in the neighborhood. You could see it. Big red barn full of all of his stuff. It's awful, Stevens said. Stevens lives across the street. And the place was home to a hot air balloon business. The Derry Fire Battalion Chief Jack Webb said the owner was...
Jack Webb?
Yes, Jack Webb. Said that the... I wish I could do a Jack Webb imitation, because that would be awesome right now.
I can't really.
Said the owner was there when the fire started. He was in the process of filling propane tanks for the baskets.
First it's the propane, then it's the loft, then it's the hay, then it's the barn. Then what are you going to do, mister, when you don't have a barn, when you don't have a place to put your bales of hay, huh? If you ever think about that? See, I can't really do it either.
Fire investigators said the owner was inside the basket when it caught fire. They said he jumped out.
What basket? What? I don't understand.
It's a hot
this
air
story.
Balloon business. You know, the basket.
I thought we were in a barn just
yes,
a second ago.
The hot air balloons are inside the barn.
Oh, they're storing them, not up in the air.
Yeah, the basket is attached to the hot air balloon.
I was picturing a flaming balloon coming down on the barn, and that's what set it ablaze.
Yeah, he was inside one of the baskets. Right. He was refilling a propane tank.
Got it.
And it caught fire. He jumped out, pushed it off this van. What? This isn't even a quote. It just says in this news piece, pushed it off this van. Thank you, New Hampshire news people. And then drove the vehicle a few feet away. But the fire soon spread to the barn where the hot air balloons and antique cars were stored, along with tools for a drywall business.
Are you sure that this wasn't like some sort of weird James Thurber meets Rube Goldberg disaster? You know, and then it went down to where the bars of gold were kept and melted them all to uselessness.
I think somebody who's like 12 years old wrote this story, honestly, because listen to this next sentence. The many propane tanks used for the balloons created a big challenge for the firefighters, and there were many explosions.
James McCluskey, age 5.
Part of the building went easily 50 to 100 feet in the air, Webb said. One explosion lifted a pickup truck that was fully involved 3 to 5 feet in the air. There were nearly 100 firefighters doing everything from fighting the blaze to getting water, but they couldn't save the barn. Wow. Apparently I got like a high school paper news piece here or something.
Yeah, things are written badly.
Anyway, it was on fire.
All right, there
you go. And there were no livestock in the barn, by the way, just balloons and cars.
Just like that episode of Sports Night where Dan had writer's block and he was trying to describe a hockey game. And there was a hockey game last night. The Blackhawks won. It was a good game. I liked it. I think – let's see if I've got the – this may be the thing for which I am looking. Let's see if I can just
– I'll tell you what I know. I know that, in fact, too many kids that begin with pot end up with heroin, then on to LSD. I know that if you drink, you suffer a loss of judgment if you drink to excess. But I also know that judgment returns when you sober up. I know, and so do you, when you flip out on an acid trip, you never know when you're going to slip out again. This is now, Bentley, not a couple of years ago. We've had time now to see and study the effects of LSD. People who haven't had a dose in weeks sail out on another trip. They never know when. The minute they drop one acid capsule or ingest it in any way, they bought the farm. They've lost any chance to depend on and even...
How awesome is this?
Yeah.
I think this leads up to... I hope that I have got there. I have many, many Jack Webb clips in my collection. And then many clips of Stan Freberg impersonating Jack Webb, which is almost as good. I hope this is the one where he ends with the phrase... Is it heroin is the bomb or is it LSD is the bomb? Because he talks about pot is the match, LSD is the fuse, heroin is the bomb. And I believe it's heroin is the bomb, which has undoubtedly been sampled by like every guy with a glow stick, on Earth.
Store that most precious of all inner senses, judgment. And in my way of thinking, without judgment, you might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
We were talking about marijuana.
We still are. Marijuana is the flame. Heroin is the fuse. LSD is the bomb.
There we go.
So don't you try to equate liquor with marijuana, mister. Not with me. You may sell that jazz to another pothead, but not to somebody who spends most of their time holding some sick kid's head while he vomits and retches sitting on a curbstone at 4 o'clock in the morning. And when his knees get enough starch back in him so he can stand up and empty his pockets, you can bet he'll turn out a stick or two of marijuana. And you can double your money. He'll be holding a sugar cube or a cap or two. So don't you con me with your mind expansion slop. I deal with kids every day. I try to clean up the mess that people like you make out of them. I'm the expert here. You're not.
Yeah, so there you
go.
So that's this episode, this famous episode of Dragnet, where he's talking to a guy who's clearly supposed to be Timothy Leary. And he's a guy who's got like sort of graying hair and like wears a caftan or whatever the hell and talks about like mind expansion and has a lava lamp. but it's because if I recall correctly, do you know the episode I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, yeah. So it ends with the famous scene of like the close tight shot of his hand as he's crushing the bag of pot because the hippies have let their baby drown or put it in an oven or something. And
damn hippies!
It's awesome. So the best thing about Jack Webb is to me that I learned about Jack Webb from Stan Freberg first.
Oh.
Because my dad had a bunch of Stan Freberg records, and Stan Freberg was a satirist and a comedian and radio comedy. He did a lot of TV commercials and radio commercials back when. But he did all these Dragnet parodies that I heard as a kid, and I didn't really know they were parodies as such. And then when I finally saw the TV show Dragnet, it was fantastic to me to see exactly how much it was not a parody.
Yeah.
In fact, how as good as Stan Freberg was, he really couldn't go more over the top than Jack Webb. Like, Jack Webb is still way more of a... And you know why? It's because he was reading all of his lines, because he never memorized anything. And so all of Jack Webb's lines were just on huge cue cards right off camera. And because he could not memorize anything to save his life. And so he would just read everything. And they would write it. The cue cards were so narrow that they could not get more than one sentence across or a fragment of a sentence, which is why everything has that clip delivery. Like he's just reading it in little staccato punctuations and bursts, and like he doesn't have an entire sentence committed to memory. And I'm doing it the Shatner thing, but that's why he spits it out like that. So
I grew up watching reruns of Dragnet because in Los Angeles, they had, when I was a kid, they had Dragnet reruns, Perry Mason, all of that stuff all the time. And my mother was a huge fan of police procedurals. So when I was a little kid growing up and my mom was still a housewife, she hadn't gone back out into the workforce yet, I grew up watching like old movies and Dragnet reruns and stuff a lot growing up. Perry Mason every single day. So.
If you go to the main branch of the police department in downtown Los Angeles, and you walk in the front door, you will see encased in Lucite Detective Joe Friday's badge. It's right there at the front. It's badge number 742, I believe, and it's right there at the front when you walk in. So awesome! Mm-hmm. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Well, why don't we do our taser watch?
Here's your taser watch
from Mug's Hot List.
Brought to you by Mugs. See, damn you, now I'm going to forget how to say it. Brought to you by mugshotlist.com, run by a friend and listener named Andy, covering 19 counties in Oregon, 13 states, including Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio. Always adding more counties and states, and manned around the clock by a team of robotized thingamajigs that keep it constantly updated. So if somebody's arrested, the mugshot gets put up almost immediately is the point. And then later... Here's the thing. I'm sure that everyone on there has just, it's a case of mistaken identity or some confusion, or the lawyer effed them or something. But if you get acquitted, or if they just figure out later that they got the wrong guy, mm-hmm. does your mugshot come down?
I don't know about how mugshot list works. I know that when I was working for the newspaper in Columbia County, I would pull mugshots off of the police department, the county police, and the jail website. They actually loaded them up.
They would remove them.
But as soon as you weren't in jail anymore, if you were let out on bail or you whatever, they would pull your mugshot off the jail site.
Well, they're there now, so look fast, kids. So here's your taser watch brought to you by mugshotlist.com. You got me running, going out of my mind.
I can do it, bro!
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't chase me, bro!
Here's Don Taylor with your taser watch.
A man threatening to kill himself, quote, by cop, was tasered by Madison, Wisconsin police Monday night and taken to a local hospital. The incident happened about 7 p.m. in an apartment building near downtown. The 44-year-old man had armed himself with an 8-inch long screwdriver and a utility hammer and was creating a disturbance in the building as officers arrived. Police spokesman Joel Despain said, when officers rounded a corner of a hallway, they found themselves within a few feet of the man. He raised the screwdriver over his head while clutching the hammer in his other hand. Officers ordered him to drop the weapons, and he told them they would have to kill him. A taser was discharged at the man, and it had the desired effect, causing him to drop the tools. He told an officer at the hospital that his intentions were to have police shoot him. The man told police he's been suffering from depression.
Yes. This is a good opportunity to talk about my non-lethal weapon, new non-lethal
subduction.
If it's a weapon with which you subdue, it is a weapon of subduction?
Subduction. Yes, exactly.
Is that right? That can't possibly be correct. It sounds right, though.
That would be correct. I don't believe that's a word anyone ever uses, but yeah, I believe that would be correct.
I like it when I get things right. I don't like it when I get things wrong.
Subjugation?
See, now I sound like I'm writing for KGW. I like when right, no like wrong.
You could write for whatever that news source is. I got that other story from.
Now Drew Carney talk glory hole, me no giggle. In any event, so I had this idea last hour during Legion of News, which I guess is not 2 hours ago. We were talking about non-lethal weapons and the tasing and the beanbagging and the so forth. And I was wondering, well, you know, you think of the taser, which never seems to work the first time. You got a taser guy like 500, 600, 700, 800 times. And then you got the beanbag, which works, but then that's a thing where it'll crack your bones. It seems like you don't want to do that to a guy, probably, because then it's like, then you got some mouthpiece who's suing you. So here's what I've got. This is the best idea ever. And I'm not exactly sure how it would function. In other words, the mechanics of it. But that's not for me. That's for brighter minds to figure out. If they know you're wielding this, they won't even break into the house in the first place. They'll just stay home and read a good book. I'm telling you right now, cops need to be armed with spider gun. It just shoots spiders at you.
I can see that. Or bees.
Yeah, I could see that, too. Or maybe just like fire ants or something.
Especially if the bee thing was combined with some kind of a spray, that it would hit you with a spray that would like
make lilac scented.
That make the bees extra angry. And then the bees were like a split second behind that.
Yeah. And then you'd have to. Well, see, but the thing about that is they might run. Although if the bees got to you fast enough, I guess you just sit there and just sort of gibber.
But the spider thing, it's like you shoot spiders at a guy and then you still have to try and take them down, and now you're going to be covered with spiders, too.
No, that's true. That's true. No. There's always a flaw in the plan.
I like my idea of a jellyfish gun.
No, that's pretty good. And so what does it do? They would just sort of go and just stick onto you?
Yeah, they'd splat onto you and then go because they'd be angry and they'd sting you.
But then you got a guy covered in gelatin you got to pick up.
Yeah, but they're not. But jellyfish, if you grab them like in the top, they don't sting you. It's only the tentacle parts on the bottom. They are removable.
Yeah, I suppose. I think that we need some extra. There's some workshopping that needs to be done on this.
In the text box, someone asks, how about a poop gun?
No, I don't think you'd be allowed to do that. And then it's like you got to go,
have to wrestle the guy into the police car, and then your car smells like poop.
And then who has to load that thing?
Yeah.
I mean, who has to load the poop gun, really?
Well, you design it so it came with canisters.
Oh, that's true. No, you'd have like a sort of from China, probably.
Some poor listener, by the way, in the textbook just logged on right now.
As I was saying, poop.
Has started with this whole conversation
spider
about
gun.
The spider guns and the poop guns.
And did he say, oh, sorry, wrong subscription. All right. Yeah. Well, there you go. There's your
32 cents. And Andy from Mugshot List, or Mugs Hot List, if you prefer, did mention in the text box that all the mugshots are removed after 180 days.
Regardless.
Yes. Assuming by robots.
Okay, there you go. So there you go. That's your Taser Watch / Poop and Spider Gun Watch, brought to you by mugshotlist.com. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Someone in the text box suggests that Non-Lethal Weapon could be a movie starring only Danny Glover.
I was sort of thinking about a joke on that earlier, and I couldn't really make it work. So I'm glad that somebody was able to put that together. Boy, you know, they actually were planning a Lethal Weapon. Was it 5, I guess?
Mm.
What was the last one? 4? Yeah, so and that's now. So we've all been spared because of Mel Gibson.
Which was the one with Jet Li? Was that 3? He was in one of the Lethal Weapon movies.
I think it was. Which one had Chris Rock?
I don't remember. It might have been 4.
I think maybe 3 and 4 had Chris Rock. Wait, is it? Is it possible that Joe Pesci was in these two?
No, I was wondering about the Jet Li, because just for the sake of the anecdote, let's say it was Lethal Weapon 4.
Yeah.
I was sitting in a theater full of people, and there was a trailer for The One, if you remember.
Right,
The
yeah.
One. And it came out and said, Jet Li. Of Lethal Weapon 4. And these two guys sitting behind me, this one guy goes, Lethal Weapon, give me a break! And he was just so outraged.
Like anti-marketing.
Yeah.
Jet Li was, I think he was in Lethal Weapon. Nah, it must be Lethal Weapon 4. Because that was right around the same time I think that he did that, God, was that awful movie he did? That's really narrowing it down. Cradle to Grave with DMX. Cradle to Grave, which I think they actually then sequelized twice. Like, not in this country, though. I think it was like only overseas. They did, like, Cradle to Grave 2 and Cradle to Grave 2 and Cradle to Grave 3. It just became a whole horrible thing. All right, here's Don Taylor.
A semi rolled over on eastbound Interstate 10 west of Buckeye, Arizona, Tuesday, dumping its load of 40,000 pounds, that's about 20 tons, of lettuce, onions, and green beans. It happened shortly before 4 a.m. at Jackrabbit Trail, forcing the Department of Public Safety to shut down a section of the freeway. Traffic was being taken off the freeway at Jackrabbit Trail, routed around a whole bunch of other areas that you don't care about because you don't live in Arizona. At one point, the backup stretched for about 10 miles, but was slowly getting by in one lane, which was open about 6:45 a.m. Crews need to replace a portion of the guardrail that was damaged in the wreck. According to DPS, the truck driver said he dozed off at the wheel and hit the guardrail just before the semi rolled and dumped 20 tons of lettuce, onions, and green beans on the highway. His passenger, who was asleep in the truck's sleep compartment. So there's a guy sleeping, and then this guy fell asleep.
That's got to be one of those things where you wake up and you wonder, am I really – why is everything upside down? I'll try to – and then you just – and then you're just like a rock tumbler. You're just in there just being polished. And the sleeper of a truck is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
When I was at one of my older brothers was a long-distance trucker for a while when I was growing up, which was awesome, by the way, because then there was the obligatory morning when he took me to school in like an 18-wheeler. And then I did the whole thing of like annoying the nuns with the horn, which was fantastic. that's the only reason you want to do that, right? A, because you're in the huge, because you're being driven to the school in a huge phallic symbol. And then also, you know, you can just see Sister Mary Ignatius or whatever. You can just kind of, you know, do the big horn thing. But he had the sleeper section back there, which is just sort of when you're a kid, and maybe even now, it doesn't seem like a thing that ought to be interesting, but it really is. Yeah. There's something fascinating about a vehicle that actually has a compartment in it that is just for sleeping, that is sort of strangely compelling to you. Let's do one more here. We'll take a break. On the other side, we got a snuff watch coming up still today. We got to do the top five songs from this week in 1985. I wrote down something about M's. I don't know what that means. It's EMSS. M's. Well, I'll figure that out. And plus, Dawn kissed her uncle at some point in the past, presumably. I'm guessing it wasn't recent, but I don't really know. I didn't actually – there was no explication given to the story. Here's,
there's so much you don't know about me. It could have been last week. You have no idea.
We should have the audience guess. we should have the audience – we'll do that. When we come back you know, here in a few minutes of this, we'll have the audience guess the specifics of when you kissed an uncle.
Uncle kissed her.
Let's do one more here, and then we'll take a break.
Police in Indianapolis continue to investigate the shooting deaths of two people and wounding of six others at a party early this morning. 37-year-old Barbara Johnson, who lived at the home, was shot and killed. 54-year-old Charles Mays, who was attending the party, was also killed.
Your people call him Corn.
Witnesses say at least one person got out of a car, put on a mask, and fired what appeared to be an assault rifle at a crowd gathered at the party. An unidentified neighbor says she's appalled.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize this actually had sound to it. I figured this was just another one of our many, many, many cases of people going nuts.
It makes you sick. And it makes you wonder...
She says from inside a bandsaw.
It makes you sick. And it makes you wonder, why are people so bent on killing each other, shooting each other, for what?
Where are you?
It makes you sick. And it makes you wonder, why are people... so bent on killing each other, shooting each other, for what?
Are they, what is going on there? Is that just the sound of a guy power washing the sidewalk clean or something? Jesus, God. All right. I wasn't really prepared.
It makes you sick.
It makes you sick.
It really does. It does.
When will people stop having sex with children? That's what I want to know.
Damn you. I wasn't prepared with that one. I was only prepared with the – I wasn't told that I would have to have that. I was only prepared – I was only prepared with this soundbite right here.
If he's still alive, what would be their working theory? Did she sell him?
All right, here's what I'm going to do right now. Before we even take a break, I'm going to add the sex with students soundbite, just so that it's always around.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Archived news cuts.
Do you have any idea how often people say that in the text box? By the way, every time any kind of like a slightly pedophilic,
really?
Thing. Yeah, people love that particular quote.
I guess I didn't really anticipate that would be the case. Let's see if I've where the hell did I put it? All right, hold on a second. Now, see, now I'm just finding nothing but Larry King sounders. All right, is this it?
I guess at this point, we are only hopeful regulators will give us some clarity about the expectations,
okay,
and then we can plan on that basis.
Of course, that's always appropriate.
And it makes you wonder, why are people so bent on killing each other, shooting each other, for what?
It can't be understood. There's no way
for
to know.
What?
For what? All right, let's take a break, shall we? All right, still to come, we have a snuff watch. We'll do the top five songs of this week in 1985, and the more you stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show right here on the Emerson News Network. Don't go anywhere. We're back right after this.
So much to do. There's plenty on the farm. I'll sleep when I'm dead. Saturday night, I like to raise a little. I'll sleep when I'm dead. Up
on the shelf. I'll sleep when I'm dead. If I start acting stupid, I'll shoot myself. Then I'll sleep when I'm dead. Sleep when I'm dead. All right. Remember up, remember down. Oh my God, my God. Up, my God. Oh my God, but the feel of my body, the wind, the wind, the wind.
Pick up a pizza, pineapple, ham, and put it in the back of a Good Times van. I'll go out and pick up the rest of the band. We're gonna have a good time. Yeah, Lily of the Valley, Lily on the rug. Lily drove here in a VW Bug. Am I on the guest list? Give her a shrug. We're gonna have a good time. Yeah, we're gonna be like an ice cream cone. You better eat it quick, gonna be long gone. Buy me a whiskey, get yourself stoned. We gonna have a good time. Well, sit on the table, sit on the floor. Act like a virgin, act like a sore. Winner or loser, they'll both do fine. And we gonna have a good time. Well, I see you in Atlanta or Abilene. Prettiest girls that I've ever seen. Be sweet as honey, girl, don't be mean. And we're gonna have a good time. Yeah, we're gonna be like an ice cream cone. Better eat it quick, gonna be long gone. Buy me a whiskey, get yourself stoned. And we're gonna have a good time. Shut the hell up. Sneak out a beer in a styrofoam cup. I'm gonna start singing, so don't interrupt. And we gonna have a good time. We'll live in the country, live in the town. Come out tonight, gonna burn them all down. Don't let the bastards get yourself down. And we gonna have a good time. Yeah, we gonna be like an ice cream cone. Better eat it quick, gonna be long gone. Buy me a whiskey, get yourself stoned. We gonna have a good time. I said buy me a whiskey, get yourself stoned. And we gonna have a good time, yeah.
Premature fade there. Well, we're going to. And good afternoon to you. It is the Rick Emerson radio program right here from the Emerson News Network, the home of greatness. It's 503-505-6964. Here's the thing. You haven't bumped your microphone once since we had that conversation at the top of the show.
Well, I think I finally found the right place for it to be.
You've become.
I also don't seem to be hurting my neck now. So
you've become mindful.
I am mindful.
You've become more planful in your goal of no longer hitting the microphone with your arm or anything else. All right. Let me know if the whole unpleasant cinching of your vertebra still happens, though.
I'm mindful of my microphonage.
Excellent.
I may, our friend of the show, Andrew Hill, keeps offering me free massages and acupuncture and things like that. So
that's the guy we met at the Fun Employment Party.
Yes.
Yes.
So I may take him up on trying to do something about my shoulder neck issue.
Yeah. See, and here's the thing about that is that it's not like I have any problem with a guy giving me a massage. It doesn't matter to me. And I know some guys get real hung up about that. You probably don't have a preference as to who gives you a massage, right? It doesn't really matter.
Well, no, not really. I haven't had many, and so actually I've only been professionally massaged by a woman, because I've only ever had one professional massage, and then I have a friend who's a massage therapist, and I let her practice on me for her, you know, when she was getting her license. But other than that, I've only had men I know personally.
The longest answer to it. I
just have to start answering questions.
That's okay.
Shorter.
It's fine. really, why should I be the only one who just goes on and on and on and on when I could have just been like five or whatever?
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, the upshot is that it's not like I have some problem with a guy giving me a massage, because whenever I go into the massage place, they just say, "Do you have a preference?" I'm like, my whole thing is instant gratification. So I'm like, whoever's free, it doesn't matter. You know, some people get all twisted up about it. But that being said, I don't think I could get like a listener massage. I don't think I have a listener massage me. It would just be weird.
Well, I have thought about the fact that there would have to be some clothing removal involved.
That's my thing. It's like everybody knows in theory that I'm spindly and pasty and unpleasant. Yeah. But it's like, you don't want people to really see how spindly and pasty and unpleasant you are.
But this guy's, you know, a professional. I mean, it's not like he's going to be
nothing
judging
he hasn't
me.
Seen before. Oh no, he'll be judging.
Yeah.
But
he's
no
not going to be judging
that.
Me in like a carnal, personal way. You know,
whatever.
At least I don't think.
Sure. Okay. Hey, you can tell yourself that. I bet you didn't think that about your uncle either. He's my uncle. He won't want to have any sort of unnatural relation with me in a physical sense. We're related. Wait, so let me just ask, while we're on the subject of the uncle thing. So
okay.
Is this I almost feel like we should this is so wrong, but I almost feel like we should offer a prize of some kind, you know, for somebody who can. But I'm trying to figure out what variable they would have to guess. In other words, I would say this happened when you were X years of age, and then it would be like a showcase showdown or something, where like if you got, you know, the closest without going over or something, you would win. Hold on. You'd win. Let's see. What would you win? Probably not this book about Islam.
No.
Got a copy of Kraken. I have to read that first. I got this autographed Blue Beetle comic from John Rogers. Oh, man, I got the coolest thing from Thinks Another World.
We got to get our T-shirts made so we have something to give away as prizes.
Yes, we do. I was going to say, I have this Walking Dead bust, but I think that's going to stay. I think that's going to be used to decorate the studio. Well, maybe I should just do it instead in lieu of the listeners. But before we do anything else, I have to turn this porn music
off.
Oh,
God.
It's creeping me out even.
And somebody in the text box says, and whoever wins gets to give Dawn a massage. No, that's not creepy at all. Dear God.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah, I realize now, having plunged into this, that there's really no way to have that be a contest without having it turn out the very unpleasant.
Yeah.
All right, so maybe I should just be the one who guesses, is sort of as a proxy for the audience. Okay. I'm just going to guess at a few things, and you tell me whether I'm right or wrong. I am guessing that you, it was at a holiday gathering.
Am I supposed to go yes or no on each guess?
Probably, because otherwise you won't be able to keep track of them. No, really. Okay. Not at a holiday gathering. You were both drunk, or had been drinking. You had both been drinking.
Yes.
Was one of you stoned as well?
No, okay. There was just alcohol.
Just drinking. This is like a hard liquor sort of a night, or a...
Probably,
if memory serves, which it probably doesn't, poorly.
My family are liquor drinkers. They're not so much beer drinkers for the most part. So.
All right. You were sitting on the sofa watching a movie.
No.
I realize now I have no way to piece this together.
Yeah,
you
have no idea what
I'll never get
happened.
This right. Okay, you were... between the ages of 25 and 30.
I was actually a little younger than that, but close.
You were between the ages of 5. I don't know. I
was 23 or 24. I think I was 23.
And so how did this come to pass, Dawn?
My uncle, my half uncle, he's about 14, 15 years younger than my mother.
Okay.
And he lived in Arizona. And he had come to visit and was staying at my mother's house for a few days. I had met him and my mother at a bar, and the three of us were drinking together. And my mother...
You're drinking at a bar with your mother and your uncle?
Yeah.
Wait, and so he is younger than your... He is your mother's...
Younger
half-brother.
Yeah.
So
My mother has three younger half-brothers, the oldest of which was born 10 years after
so her. So this is actually not unlike my family. So this guy, your uncle, he and your mom share a mother.
Right.
Yeah, they have the same mom, different dads,
right,
though.
And I did grow up with him around. But again, keep in mind,
it wasn't
that,
like you saw him at a bar and went, yeah, who's that handsome gent?
But when I was a kid, he was in his, you know, 20s.
All right, okay.
And so, and he was a very handsome man. I mean, I haven't seen him for a while, so he might not be handsome anymore, but he'd be very old now.
He was distinguished.
But he was a good-looking man.
All right.
Just dark curly hair, had kind of like that short crop Cat Stevens kind of beard kind of thing. He was the bad boy of the family, my Uncle David.
I think that goes without saying.
And yeah, and so my mother suggested he wanted to continue drinking, and my mother, for some weird reason, said, why don't you take Dave out and go have some drinks? So I was like, yeah, okay. So we were having a good time. Basically, he and I, the thing we shared is we were both sort of, if there were black sheep, then we were them. We both shared that. So so we went out and we had some drinks and we were sitting in a bar and we were drinking. And then at some point, he leaned over and he kissed me.
See, and I guess I never would have, I guess I thought it was somehow much more elaborate than that.
Well, it did get a little more elaborate. Then we were going to go home, and then we were actually kind of making out in the car a little bit. But the thing is that he was staying at my mom's house, and I was living with my boyfriend. So it's like if we had wanted it to be any more.
You had to get a Motel 6.
Yeah, that's where it was the point where it's like, okay, no, this is already like. Right now, it's just kind of illicit and kind of sexy,
yeah,
icky, but anything further than this. And then I was getting him driving, and then that was when I just threw up out the window of the car because...
Wait, hold on, no.
I had way too much to drink.
Oh, okay, not out of shame.
No, it's just like, pull over, oh, crap. And then I threw up. And at that point, the mood had pretty much been broken.
Yeah, no, a girl hurls and that's it. That's the end of that. So you're making out and then you realize, though, that it's like taking the extra step of getting out your master charge or whatever and going and say, one room, no baggage, one bed.
Yeah, me and my uncle. No, that's not going to happen.
That's a thing where, because then especially, then it's like there's a paper trail of some kind and you have to admit that you are renting a room so you can have relations, further relations, with a relative.
Yeah,
that's a thing you don't want to do. I mean, I can get. Hey, look, and just so you're, it's not like a one sided equation here. I'll tell you right now, I got this cousin. It's unbelievably hot. If she wanted to make out, I would totally do that. I would completely make out with my cousin. And just if she's listening, sorry, you know what are you going to do? It's hot.
Mm-hmm.
Related or not. I mean, I know it just becomes one big drive-by trucker song, but it's like, it just, you know, there's just, the heart wants what it wants, Dawn. All right, well, there you go.
This really had very little to do with the heart, really, but yes, I get your gist.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Here's Dawn Taylor with your news on Tuesday.
Mori R. Yohai, the creator of the Cheese Doodles snack, has died at the age of 90.
Is this a snuffwatch?
No, this is different from the... This is a... Unless you want to do a double snuffwatch.
Are all deaths under snuffwatch? Well, that's a notable death or you wouldn't be reading it, right?
Okay.
I mean, that's the thing. Is like if it did not have some sort of cultural or social import, we would not be calling it.
Well, let's do the snuffwatch because we like the snuffwatch.
All right, hold on a second.
Too, so.
You know, I've done that thing. I got the trackpad over here, my MacBook, and I've done that thing where I love the trackpad. I really do, especially now that you can right click on it. But the problem is, do you ever do this thing on your trackpad on your computer where you get like in my case a little bit of Vizo, and then your finger like sticks on it. It's like you're playing guitar and you got like something sticking in your finger.
And then you try to like clean it off
by licking your finger
and rubbing it on the trackpad. And then now you're making the...
Spreads it around.
And now you're making the cursor just go woo and you're running the risk of doing something wrong.
Horrifying. All right, hold on. Here's your double snuff watch for Tuesday right here in the Rick Emerson radio program. All right, here's your double snuff watch. This is Don Taylor.
Hi, Mori R. Yohai, the creator of the Cheese Doodles snack, died at the age of 90. He died of cancer on July 27th at his Long Island home in Kings Point. He developed the snack at his old London Foods factory in the 1950s. The company already was selling Dipsy Doodles rippled corn chips, which were made with a machine that spit them out under pressure through a nozzle shaped like the letter W. He applied a similar concept for the Cheese Doodles, said his son, Robbie Yohai, adapting the machine to extrude liquefied cornmeal into a more roundish pinhole shape.
Mm.
The snack was coated with seasoning and cheddar cheese that colors hands bright orange. To make the Cheese Doodles healthier, they were baked, not fried.
Okay, so this is one of those things now. First of all, I wonder if his kid is like Hugh Grant in, what is it? It's not in Love Actually. Is it in About a Boy? Where, like, his dad wrote Santa's Rocket Sled or some crap, and, like, that's his whole life. Is like, he's the son of the guy who, like...
The Cheese Doodle guy.
Well, and I wonder if the maker of the Cheese Doodle, I wonder if he's like that guy that created the, you know, the Frappuccino, who got, like, $400 or something for it, and who now is, like, so depressed and embittered.
Old London Foods still is in existence. But he sold the company to Borden in 1965.
Okay, but the guy actually did own the company,
yeah,
though. Oh, okay. So he wasn't just like some lab tech that created the Cheese Doodle and took it to the boss who then took it.
Yeah, he sold the company to Borden in 1965 and then became senior vice president of Borden's Snacks Foods division.
Awesome. Okay, well done. So here's the thing, though. I don't really know what a Cheese Doodle is.
It's like a Cheeto.
Is it, or is it like a Cheez-It?
No, it's like a Cheeto.
Okay, but it's just... I believe
Cheese Doodles came before Cheetos.
It's just differently...
But they're an East Coast Cheeto.
It's differently shaped.
I think they're essentially the same thing. They're the puffy orange...
Is it cheese or cheese?
C-H-E-E-Z.
E-E-Z. Cheese Doodle. Oh, I'm looking at this picture of this guy. He's awesome. All right, let's see. Oh, gee, has a Wikipedia entry. Let's see. And Cheese Doodles. Okay, I'm going to the Wikipedia entry for Cheese Doodles right here. Oh, okay, so you know what they are. They're almost they're like puffed Cheetos,
yeah,
as opposed to the more the drier,
the fried Cheetos.
Yeah, the ones that are sort of more arbitrarily shaped.
Yeah. The harder, crunchier ones.
Yeah. So that's there. Oh, they also come in okay, I've misjudged these my entire life then. Because I think I always equated them with being Cheez-Its, which I loathe.
Oh, no.
I want some of these. All right. I got to close this right now.
Well, in the 1970s, Yohai was the associate dean of the business school at the New York Institute of Technology in Long Island. His daughter said that he began writing poetry after someone suggested he write a memoir. He produced two poetry books, one of which focused on interpreting the Torah. He learned Hebrew so that he could read the teachings of the Zohar, a foundational work in the literature of Jewish mystical thought known as the Kabbalah. He also supported many conservation and environmental causes through his Mori R. Yohai Foundation. He was born in Harlem, graduated from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, and had a master's degree from New York University.
All right. He is my new favorite person, by the way. He is the new guy that I want to be like when I grow up. Because you like to see a guy who is smart, makes a contribution to the culture, and then continues doing something worthwhile and enjoyable with his life as he ages. Lives to the age of 90, mm-hmm, and seemed to have his crap together until the very end.
And left behind the legacy of Cheese Doodles.
A doodle-rific legacy that will go on forevermore. Excellent. Well done, sir. Fare thee well.
Also dead, Mitch Miller, the goateed orchestra leader who asked Americans to sing along with Mitch on television and records, also produced hits for Tony Bennett, Patti Page, and other performers, has died at the age of 99. He died Saturday in Lenox Hill Hospital after a short illness. He was a key record executive at Columbia Records in the pre-rock and roll era, making hits with singers Bennett Page, Rosemary Clooney, and Johnny Mathis. He struck out on projects with Frank Sinatra and a young Aretha Franklin, and in general scorned the rise of rock. Sing Along with Mitch started as a series of records, then became a popular NBC show starting in early 1961. The TV show ranked in the top 20 for the 61-62 season, and soon children everywhere were parodying Miller's stiff-armed conducting. The all-male chorus sang old standards, joined by a few female singers, most prominently Leslie Uggams, one of the first...
Who was Leslie Uggams?
Uggams. Leslie Uggams.
Uggams?
One of the... She was a...
I don't think I know that.
She was a...
I don't think I know who she is.
A black pop singer in the 60s.
I know Mitch Miller, but Leslie Uggams is... Uggams? U-G-G-U-M-S?
Yes.
Yeah, I got nothing.
A-A-M-S.
A-M-S. No, I got nothing. Yeah, no, I'm...
He also was an accomplished oboist who... played with a number of orchestras early in his career, including under Toscanini and such.
His oboeage was strong.
And including one put together in 1934 by George Gershwin. But
and he was how old?
He was 99.
Excellent. See, I like guys who are able to, you know, to sort of hang on in a way that, you know, because I saw Mitch Miller interviewed, actually, not too long ago. It couldn't have been. I guess he was like 90 already, but I mean, still. And he seemed to be still having his mental acuity was still there, and he was sharp. I was aware of Mitch Miller, again, from an early age because Mad Magazine parodied him relentlessly throughout the 60s. And I had a huge collection of Mad Magazines when I was a kid. And that was where I first the one thing I will say about Mitch Miller, because he was he gets, in my opinion, unfairly labeled as being a sort of rock and roll hater, which is true in the sense that he didn't like the music aesthetically. But they at one point tried to rope him into the anti-rock movement that was happening sort of in the late 50s and early 60s, much as it would again in the 80s. And they tried to drag him into that, saying, you know, having him say that rock and roll was immoral. And he actually he flatly refused because he said he didn't think it was possible for any music to be immoral. He said he just found it monotonous. But that he told them to go get stuffed. So there you go. Ian Marsh, his own drummer.
Didn't the follow the bouncing ball thing come from Sing Along with Mitch?
I believe it did, actually. That was the thing. And then they again, and he had that the classic pose with his arms outstretched like he was giving some weird dual Nazi salute. That's how he conducted. And then he was sort of like, you know, and the thing about Mitch Miller is he tapped into something. However much he fell off the cultural radar, that guy tapped into something that they needed. It filled a need for the American public, because they brought it back with Lawrence Welk in the 70s, which is something for old folks to listen to. That reminds them of a time when youth weren't running around screaming and setting fire to their draft cards and burning bras and so forth.
Well, I heard a piece about him on NPR yesterday, and one of the things they said that he developed the Sing Along with Mitch records with this male chorus in a really sort of an almost universal key. You know, so that it was designed so that you could sing along with the music if you wanted to, but also tried to make it musical enough that if you didn't want to sing along to it, it was actually still just listenable if you wanted to just play the record. And it's kind of interesting, the whole idea of someone deliberately engineering idea.
He actually spoke at length and really effusively about how he wanted to bring music to the masses. He said it's funny that you mentioned the Toscanini thing, because he was, Miller was so bent on making music accessible to everyone, and to making it a thing that was more readily available, and to no longer have people be intimidated by the idea that they would sing or that they would perform publicly. So anyway, so there you go. So that guy's dead. Anyway, that's Mitch Miller and Johann
and Maury Johai, creator of the cheese doodle.
There you go. So fare thee well, says the Rick Emerson Show. There's your double snuff watch for Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Let's see. We'll do one more or two more. Let's do two more here, and I will. Then we'll rustle up the top five, and we'll get that going on. Let's see. By the way, join us tomorrow on the Rick Emerson Show, and our guests will include. God damn, I just don't remember who the other person is. And I know that Cheryl is screaming at the speakers right now. Tomorrow we will be speaking with, I believe, either Aaron Mesh. Well, either Aaron Mesh or Kelly Clark. I know exactly what it is. Tomorrow, no, it's all come back to me in a flash. Tomorrow, which is Wednesday, we will be talking to Kelly Clark, or Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. I believe it is Aaron Mesh. Also, Dan Hanico from Powell's Books will be joining us again. Tomorrow we're going to talk about children's books.
Hmm.
Not just young adult stuff, but actual like children's books and some of the classics, as well as some of the things that you breeders want to know about for your offspring. So that'll be tomorrow. Thursday, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian.
We both keep looking over at the board as if there's something written on there.
I hope that the answers will just sort of appear there is the thing. Except there's just a huge thing that Sarah and Greg have put up that says, cancel chat roulette with an exclamation mark after it in like blood red. All right, here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Senators John McCain and Tom Coburn put out a report highlighting what they say is a serious waste in stimulus spending. McCain acknowledges that the stimulus did save some jobs.
This is
stimulus.
Stimulus. Oh, I'm sorry, wrong.
They're bound to have had, when you spend this much money, some jobs created. But what's the price we have paid for future generations of Americans? A $1.1 trillion additional debt.
Wow, I forgot that guy was even still alive. But, you know, yet he is. Wasn't there some talk during the last election that they didn't even know if he was going to keep his seat in Arizona? They thought he might actually just lose that altogether, too. Yet he just continues to cling on to life like a barnacle. All right.
President Obama has said the Bush administration put him in a deep hole to start out, but McCain says that line won't work with voters. This is GOP.
GOP.
B-I-O-B, no matter what it is, blame it on Bush. He can keep that up. The American people are going to hold him accountable this November, not an administration that went out of power over a year and a half ago.
He's almost chortling as he says that.
And the other thing is that you can tell a little bit of why he didn't get elected, because you can actually hear him hitting the podium as he speaks.
B-I-O-B, no matter what it is, blame it on Bush. He can keep that up. The American people are going to hold him accountable this November, not an administration that went out of power over a year.
He's just punching the guy next to him as he's talking.
Ted, get over here. This is one of those things where he wants to come in and give those little whippersnappers what for in the press room.
Economic advisor Jeffrey McAdams says only time will tell how the current situation will affect election strategies.
I'm sorry, just
strategy.
One second. I was trying to find I was trying to be too. I was trying to be too clever. By half.
Never works.
No, it doesn't. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Do you want to give me the setup one more time there?
Not really, but no.
Never mind. Let's just...
Jeffrey McAdams says time will tell.
Now listen.
Current situation will affect election strategies.
You damn woman. Because here's what it was supposed to be. Jeffrey McAdams says, blah, 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 election strategies. And then I would say...
I guess at this point, we are only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about the expectations, and then we can plan on that basis.
See, and that would have been so great if only I'd been prepared. But you know what I forgot to do is I forgot to actually label it, correctly. And so then I went for looking for something called Jeffrey McAdams, which of course this isn't called because it's.
I guess at this point we are only
generic.
Hopeful that.
It's the anatomy of a failed joke right there. That's what that is.
So Cheryl advises me that we will have Aaron Mesh tomorrow.
Excellent.
And that Dan Hanico, don't have a final confirmation on him yet. So he's still a big baby, but we might have Dan Hanico.
Okay. But we will have Aaron Mesh tomorrow and then Anna Griffin from The Oregonian on Wednesday. Have we played this horrible thing, this horrible Lindsay Lohan song? I think that's a thing we talked about.
Yeah, I don't think we did. The one that her father did?
Yeah, I feel like we got to play this. I want to play this just, and then we'll do the top five as well. I haven't heard this all the way through, but I wanted to get this at least a little bit played because I think we teased it the other day. So we'll do this, then we'll do the top five from this week in 1985. So I guess this is Michael Lohan. And I had several people send this to me yesterday for some reason, and then I got it again this morning. So this is just called Lilo's song. Subtitled If I Let You Go. And I haven't heard it, so who knows? It might be flawless.
It'd be great.
It might be a work of unbelievable genius, but I'm guessing that's not the case. So this is Michael Lohan about his daughter Lindsay Lohan. All right. Oh, I like what we're hearing. This is like every post-Columbine song that came out. He's punching goths in heaven now.
Woke up this morning.
Oh, wow.
Heard the words to your song.
It's so much better than I could have expected.
Never meant to hurt you, but know where I went wrong. Raise you to understand all the good in life. Somehow I lost my way. Should have taken my advice. I love you so much.
This is so great.
Just one chance to make it up, because a father's love will never die.
This makes me so happy.
Oh, Lord.
See things through no matter what the reasons why.
I'm so glad we played this.
To see him scribbling away on his pad going, what rhymes with cokehead load?
My love for you is a lie.
Oh, it's like every graduation at a Christian high school.
Always daddy's little girl.
I'm so creeped out.
My never fades. But now so far from me, with only faith to light the way.
It's like a bad Michael W. Smith cover band.
Miss you so much. Just one chance to make it up, because a father's love will never
die. Who is this song meant for? Like, he didn't just send it to her, because then I wouldn't be hearing it.
See things through no matter.
What was his, where was this song meant to go eventually?
Anywhere that it would get him more attention, whore attention. Because he's a big attention whore who wants attention. Because he's a whore.
Big middle eight here? Yeah.
I can't take one breath without wondering how you are.
Oh, man, I love this song.
With every tear I cry. Father's love,
yeah.
Will never die.
Wow. All we need is a children's chorus at the end.
We'll see things through no matter what the reason.
Oh, I should have brought my auto-tuning program.
I see you look away. You hear the stories and the lies. But if you need me, dear, my love for you is a lie. I promise you, my love for you won't die.
Wow, that's terrible.
Yeah.
That's really, really bad. I mean, that's no good. That's a
no.
Bad, bad song is what that is. Good God Almighty. And you know, he recorded that at home. And the thing is, when you're hearing that song, you can picture the video too, where it's like a lot of like, it's opaque black and white. Overlaid with like faux home movies of him and Lindsay like dancing in the sprinkler. Mm-hmm.
Footprints in the sand on the beach.
And then he's doing that thing where he's got his eyes closed, but he's like rocking his head kind of back and forth, you know, like because he's feeling it.
Then a shot of him standing at a window looking outside pensively.
It's like the lace curtains blow very slowly. It's like a David Brent production.
He's wearing a white dress shirt, but it's untucked,
yeah.
You know, and like the bottom three buttons are unbuttoned, so it's kind of blowing just a little bit.
I bet at the end it actually has like a tight shot of his hand sort of touching the picture frame in which a photograph of Lindsay is, and then like it lingers on that and then does the slow fade. Oh, wow. Well, compared to that,
five.
I mean, this... This will be a cakewalk.
Three,
you just
two,
wanted to make this list
one,
sound better
yes.
By comparison.
Yes, I did.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
And for no readily apparent reason, these are the... Top five songs from this week 25 years ago. The top five songs from this week in 1985. Don Taylor, what might the honorable mention, that is to say, number six, be?
That'd be Corey Hart, Never Surrender.
Yeah.
This is all by way of making people glad they don't live in 1985 anymore.
Seriously, for people who are like, the 80s were awesome. The 80s sucked. The 80s were terrible. I was there. I know. The 80s were bad.
Just a little more.
Hey, it's Michael Lowen.
Asking for a father's love, 'cause just a little more time could open closing doors. Just a little uncertainty.
All right, Corey Hart, was he like a soap opera actor or something?
Isn't he from Canada?
As though that explains everything or anything.
I don't know.
He's
the sunglasses at night guy, isn't he?
Yeah,
yeah,
and also...
That's all I know.
Sang that weird song, Boy in the Box, and then... did he also sing that Dream a Little Dream of Me cover?
I have no
from
idea.
The Dream a Little Dream with Patrick Dempsey?
Sure.
I think he might have.
Why not?
I had a girlfriend who's really into that. I think that's... Mm-hmm. Whatever happened to Corey Hart, do you suppose?
I don't care. Just playing at a Marriott lounge somewhere in Schenectady.
This is one of those things that if you were to speed it up, like if I played this at double speed, it would become a montage song, you know? But now it's just sort of dull.
Actually, if he wasn't singing, this sounds like it could be the music to accompany, like, a documentary, you know, about, like, aquarium life.
The lichen. And so, as Mother Earth continues another rotation... The cycle of life is complete. With a little perseverance, you can get things done. He's just reading things off the inside of a print shop at the mall now. Stitch in Time saves 9. All right, we should move on. That was not even we're not even actually onto the real list. That was just honorable mention.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just going to get better from here because, you know, they're even higher up on the Billboard list. So it means that they will get increasingly better as we go on along,
That's
right?
always how that works.
The higher on the list, the better
please,
the song.
Please move on. Please.
Number 5, Bruce Springsteen, Glory Days.
I got to say, I actually don't dislike this song.
But as Springsteen songs go, though, this is, you know.
But this is the thing. We were talking about Born in the USA a while back. This is the thing about this song. This is a great song, but that it's considered kind of cheesy because no one ever really listens to the lyrics. It's a misconstrued song. This is another one of those songs that is used in a totally incorrect and non-ironic fashion. It's used by meatheads.
This guy's going, Glory Days! Woo! Yeah, high school's awesome!
You know, by a guy who's like, whose company softball team has just won like the big title and now they're going to go drink some beer at like a Pizza Hut. You know, whereas the song is about a guy whose best days are behind him.
Yeah. Sorry, I hit the...
Everyone take a drink. It's about a guy who's talking about himself and his friend and his female friend, all of whom are pining for the lost days of their youth because their current lives suck. And in fact, at the end of the song, Springsteen says that he notes that he himself is not immune to that and that at some point in the future, he will also, despite his best intentions, sit around and long for the days of yesteryear when things were better. Great song, though. It's like all the best Springsteen songs. Even if the song itself lends itself to seeming a little corny, it sounds great.
Although every time I hear it, though, I just have that image in my head of the video, which is him standing in a bar singing with little Steven, who has that like bandana wrapped around his head, like he's some kind of ugly, crazy old gypsy woman.
Thinner. What a great sound, though. The great thing about Springsteen songs is you can close your eyes and perfectly picture them being played on a boardwalk somewhere.
Yeah.
And you know why? It's that, like, calliope sort of thing that happens in the background there.
The Hammond organ as hurdy-gurdy, you will.
Is that what it is?
I guess.
But, yeah, that's exactly the sort of thing. And this is the telltale line here when he says So it's one of those depressing songs that sounds happy that he does.
Which kind of sums up the whole Born in the USA album, really.
And when he says, leaves you with nothing, mister, but boring stories of glory days. And, you know, but people hear this and go, that's awesome. I'll take a Pabst. These are the top five songs for this week in 1985.
Number four, Whitney Houston, You Give Good Love.
Let's see, where's, I'm sorry, that's...
Hey, you picked this.
I didn't pick this song, I just picked the year picked the songs, Don.
You could have picked a better year.
There are no better years.
You had a whole book of years here.
That sounded strangely religious. Sort of like I'm at the gates
of
heaven.
The book of years.
Oh, well, I'll just settle down for a nap. Maybe the last time we played a Whitney Houston song, it was noting that they're all so goddamn slow.
Yeah, but you can entertain yourself by just imagining her on, like, Being Bobby Brown. Right, Bobby! Bobby! Bobby, I need a mirror and a razor blade! Bobby!
I don't think you were... I think this was maybe before you were coming on the show that we had that Enquirer story... About, well, they had photos of the inside of her bathroom at home.
Yeah.
It was just bad. I mean, it was just like, it really was just depressing. It was just like filth and just scum. I don't mean like it was cluttered. I mean like it was crap just like everywhere. It was filthy. You know, and like bags of crack and crack pipes and what empty bags of crack. But that wasn't the worst part. It was like the filth encrusted bathroom was not the worst part. And the dozens and dozens and dozens of crack vials everywhere. The worst part was a guy talking to somebody in the story talking about how they also found a bunch of like... I would imagine heavily used and broken vibrators. And that they talked to a guy from an adult store who said that every now and again, she or one of her people would just go in and sort of like fetch a bunch of a bag of brand new vibrators and take them back to the house.
Dear God.
And so we just pictured her just sitting in the back, you know, just sort of firing up the bass pipe and just, you know, and for, you know. Yeah. Think about that.
Yeah.
Think about that the next time you're kissing your uncle. I don't even know what that means. Oh, God, it burns. All right, these are the top...
This is the guy who wants to make out with his cousin.
Well, yeah. I was going to try to say something glib there, but there's nothing glib to be said. These are the top five songs from this week in 1985.
Number three, Sting. If you love somebody, set them free.
You know that thing I said about liking Sting more than the Police? This is not part of that equation.
I like Sting.
I like Sting.
I like
too.
Sting, and I like the Police. I do not like this song.
This is from that Dream of the Blue Turtles crap he was doing, right? Isn't that from, isn't this from that record? If you ever asked yourself, I wonder what Kink FM might have been playing up until, I don't know, 5 years ago, this is the answer. Where is the... It's like there's a big hole here in the front where the song ought to be. Like everybody else is in another room somewhere.
Yeah.
I have nothing to say about this song. It's just sort of there. This is the blandest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And you have to work pretty hard. I mean, a guy's screaming everything and yet still sounding amazingly bland. I mean, that's
and then
almost...
just mouthing this ridiculous platitude as well as the main line of his song.
Yeah, there's no actual song here. Yep.
We could move on to number two.
Is this number three? Are we almost done?
This is number three, yeah.
Oh, thank God.
Number two.
All right.
Paul Young, Every Time You Go Away.
You had that little, like you were girding yourself there.
I said I had a friend who had a small child who heard this song and misunderstood the words. And so every time I hear the song, I hear her misinterpretation, which was, every time you go away, you take a piece of meat with you.
I don't know why that's so funny. I guess it's just, in my mind's eye, it's the sort of, like, cartoonish T-bone steak.
Yeah.
With a guy tucking it under his arm.
Just scampering off with it.
You're just going to be meat in the room. It's like these are all by Michael Lowen somehow.
Gotta give Sting credit for one thing. At least he had actual musicians playing real instruments.
Yeah, but
Here we go.
Every time you go away, you take a piece of meat with you.
Did you press the kid more on, like, what kind of meat and where was he taking it?
Well, she actually asked her mom, as, you know, what does that mean? Why is he taking meat? And we had to explain that she was misinterpreting the song.
You should have responded with, well, what do you think? Just to milk that for all it was worth. Ah, kids.
Well, it's a song about a man who's robbing a butcher shop.
Who is Paul Young?
I don't know.
But I mean, was he?
He used to be with an actual band, and I can't for the life of me remember.
He wasn't with Till Tuesday. That was Paul Carrick, I think. Paul Young.
And Paul Young is such a boring name.
Seriously,
if you just look up Wikipedia or something, look up Paul Young. Oh, you have like 20 million responses. You know.
Yeah, I got nothing. Yeah.
Oh, wait, here we go. Paul Young, English pop musician.
Every time you go away,
yep,
you take a piece of meat with you.
Why are we still listening to this?
I don't know. Every time you go away. He was lead singer of Cat Cool and the Cool Cats.
Oh, that's where I know him from.
Probably not. And he was with a band called the Q-Tips.
No.
And then he became a solo performer. So
that's impossible. That's impossible.
No, no, no.
That didn't happen.
Apparently, this is a Daryl Hall song. This is actually a cover. I'd much rather hear Daryl Hall sing this.
How is it possible that he went to a solo career after being in the Q-Cats or whatever, the Cat Q's? Whatever.
I don't know. In the late 70s, he joined Street Band, who had one top 20 hit in the UK with the humorous novelty track Toast.
There you go, Britain, the land of wit. God. Toast.
Toast. A novelty song about toast.
Is it about toast?
I don't know. It's just called Toast. I don't know what it's about.
Goddamn, we're still listening to the song.
And then the band broke up and he formed the Q-Tips, who played live but had no hits.
Is this before or after?
And then he signed to CBS Records as a solo performer.
Is this before or after his stint in the Thamesmen? God. Another guy shouting.
He sang the opening and closing lines to the Band-Aid single, Do They Know It's Christmas?
What's the opening, This Christmas Time? That's him, right?
I guess, sure.
Yeah. You know, you've subjected me to this whole song. Don't think I wasn't on to you. I know that was your plan.
Take a piece of meat with you.
Take a piece of meat with you. Anyway, the number one song.
Yes, Dawn?
Is Tears for Fears' Shout.
You sure you wouldn't rather hear this?
No, I want to hear Tears for Fears. I actually like Tears for Fears.
You don't want me to delay it with this little gem?
Woke up this morning, heard the words to your song.
I wonder if he just had written a bunch of, like he wrote a 9/11 song, and he wrote a Columbine song, and a JonBenet Ramsey song. None of them sold, and so he just keeps recycling it as one thing after another. And I'll write one about Lindsay. That'll sell. I'm sorry. What was number one, Don?
Tears for Fears. Shout. That doesn't sound right at all.
Sounds like I'm playing the drum and bass remix. This sounds correct.
Ah, there we go. I like this song.
Am I playing some inadvertent, like,
Are you playing some weird dance mix of it?
Probably. I don't really know that I would know the difference.
I still really like this song for some reason, though.
Well, you mentioned the other day that you are a big fan of... Didn't we have some Everybody Wants to Rule the World?
Yeah, I liked... I don't know why I liked... I don't think I liked Tears for Fears when I was younger, but it's like, for some reason, they've grown on me as I've gotten older. Maybe there's this point when you just realize that most music is so awful that you look at stuff that you thought was awful before you go, yeah, it's really not so bad, really, in comparison.
I will say that I like this song. I like the chorus of the song a lot because it's sort of haunting. It has a sort of sinister. See, they lose me here when they get into all this, when they become a Thompson Twins song. But the chorus I like a lot because it has a sort of sinister vibe to it. I like.
And it could have been worse, by the way. The number 10 song on Billboard, this was DeBarge. So, you know.
Rhythm of the Night.
Who's Holding Donna Now?
I don't even think I know Who's Holding Donna Now. I mean, not literally.
There was song. Also a Night Ranger song and a song by Huey Lewis and the News in the top 10 this week.
You know what? Just because I feel like I've punished you with this, you should pick a top 5 from that list for tomorrow. You should go through and pick a year. It doesn't even have to be this week in a year. It could be any week represented by Joel Whitburn's book of the top 40.
But just a top Billboard top 5 from any date.
From any date.
Okay.
From that. Yeah, and that takes you up to the year 2000. So you got 55 years worth of music to choose from.
Okay.
There.
I will do that.
Yeah.
I may go back to the early 70s because I think the early 70s is unfairly maligned.
Yeah, I have no way to end this.
Yeah.
All right, I'll just...
At this point, we are only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about their expectations, and then we can plan on that basis.
But, Don, the other important question is...
When will teachers finally understand it's not okay to have sex with our students?
It can't be known.
Unfortunately, I did say that I think the early 70s were unfairly maligned, and then I just flipped to March 10th, 1973, when the top two songs of the Billboard charts were Killing Me Softly with His Song and Dueling Banjos.
And they say we live in two Americas. All right. On that note, let's end, shall we? Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week and quite possibly Dan Hanico from Powell's Books. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor. Our advanced technology and magic is provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Tuesday, August 3rd, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Don't forget, after a brief musical interlude, Legion of News Encore is next, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.